So Maharaj, we're going to begin with the first one, which was this feeling of, I am not good enough. And we know in the world, people feel this in all respects of life. Just this inadequacy, I'm not good enough. But it's interesting that it also comes up in spiritual life as well, where you just feel, I'm not worthy of Krishna's mercy, and I want to do it, but actually because I have all this dirt in my heart still, the lust, the greed, the anger, the envy, I'd rather just stay away from the devotees, from the temple, because I feel, yeah, I'm just not qualified to be there. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on how we could address that particular concern.
Hare Krishna, everyone. So very happy to be here. Yeah, we can have a discussion on this. And I guess I'll share a few thoughts and happy for all of you to come in. And I'm welcome to come in and maybe share it a little deeper. I'm not good enough. Yeah. Once I was driving past the church and there was a sign and it said, every saint had a past and every sinner has a future. I was like, okay, it makes sense. Yes, we have many things within us. Sometimes we look deep into our hearts and we have a lot of anger. We have a lot of envy. We have a lot of pride. The first way in which the Bhagavad Gita empowers us is to tell us where our own impurities come from. The first thing that Krishna establishes in the Bhagavad Gita is that each and every person is a pure soul. A soul which can't be contaminated. A soul which can't be stained. A soul which can't be permanently corrupted. But a soul which can be covered. So each one of us in this room, we are actually all pure spiritual living beings. But what Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita is at the moment we're covered by a subtle body, a gross body, a physical body, and with these coverings come our imperfections. No one is a greedy person. We're just souls who are temporarily affected by greed. No one is an angry person. We may have traits or problems with our temper in this particular point in our life, but that's not who we ultimately are. And so the first thing the Bhagavad Gita helps us to do is separate ourselves from our imperfections. The second thing the Bhagavad Gita does is it begins to give you a process and a practice by which you can actually purify these things and overcome these things. Most people in this world have never tried a spiritual process to overcome their anger. Most people have not tried a spiritual process to overcome material desires. Most people have tried to deal with it in other ways. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna opens up another avenue that you can explore that creates deep transformation on a spiritual level. And then the third thing I'd say is that when we actually go on that journey of trying to change ourselves, and we're very introspective on that journey, then the amazing thing is you'll begin to look back at yourself. Yourself 1 year ago, yourself 5 years ago. And you may look at yourself and you may say, I'm not perfect, but I'm definitely better than I was 1 year ago. I'm definitely better than I was 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And you can actually begin to see the spiritual transformation within yourself. I often share this with devotees that I've kept a journal for over 20 years. So every few days I write something about what I went through in life, experiences, observations of myself, others, lessons I learned. And it's amazing when you look back at your journal, things you wrote 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and you see how much you've changed, then it really makes you understand that this process is incredible and it works. So, these are some thoughts.
Nice, thank you so much. So I wanted to ask, obviously one person shared that was their particular obstacle. If I was to ask, how many people actually experience that feeling of, I'm not good enough, or spiritual inadequacy? Just raise your hand if others also experience it. Yeah, so almost, like 40% of the room also feels like that. And one of the challenges I was thinking is just this feeling of guilt that sometimes we experience. So we know what we should be doing, But yeah, almost as Arjun says to Krishna, what is this force that is preventing you? So if you were someone who was in that space where you know that you should be doing it, but guilt is holding you back from continuing to practice, how do you overcome that? What practical tips can you give to actually overcome that feeling?
Yeah. So in our life, there's an ideal of where we'd like to be, and there's a reality of where we are, and there's a gap. And that gap is frustrating. That gap is uncomfortable. That gap generates guilt. Generally, people respond to that gap in two ways. Either they focus on the wheel and they just become too hopeless, thinking it's too far, or people just focus on the ideal and say, well, I am who I am, let me just stay where I am and just start getting comfortable with it. But there is a third way, which is rather than staying satisfied with where you are, rather than becoming hopeless by thinking how far the ideal is, between the ideal and the real, there is an achievable. There's something that you can do today to walk towards that ideal. It may not be the ideal, but at least it's something achievable you can do today. And I think one of the biggest problems in our life is that we focus too much on either being ideal or trying to become satisfied with the reality of where we are, when what we can actually start doing is looking at a progressive way, which is what is achievable. How can I walk towards the person I want to be? Sometimes they say, you overestimate what you can do in like 1 month, but you underestimate what you can do in a year. Right? So sometimes when we want to change, we want it now. We want it in a month. But what we don't realize is that if we do something manageable in 1 month, but we keep doing something manageable for 12 months, then after 1 year, you might find you're where you want to be. So let's not look for quick change. Let's not become discouraged if we don't become saints overnight. But rather, let's look at an achievable and walk towards that.
Yeah, beautiful. What you said really resonated, because I was thinking about my own spiritual journey, and I was saying those ups and downs. And so Keshav Maharaj was saying, you either stay stuck where you are, which is potentially mediocre, and then like look at the ideal and think, I can never get there. One trap that I fell into was something that is known as, kind of in psychology, as a cognitive distortion, where essentially you just think all or nothing. So not just something, just nothing. So I would be chanting, let's say I was chanting 5 rounds, all my friends around me are chanting 16 rounds, and I'm thinking, well, I can't get to 16 rounds, and I'm not very happy at 5 rounds, so I'm just not going to chant anything, because that makes me feel much better about the fact I'm not even trying. So if I'm not really trying, then it's not that I'm not good enough, it's just I'm not trying. So we have to really watch out for the mind and the tricks that the mind will play, and not just the mind, but Maya also that will prevent us. So
No, I was just going to say one mental. I have to say it because I say it every program. So. But I really like it because it really, for me, it just paints the picture beautifully. Is I use this analogy of a plane that's going from one city to another, a plane that's going from London to Heathrow. There's a flight path. Every pilot has a flight path. But the amazing thing is that in reality, when a plane flies from one city to another, did you know for 80% of the journey, it's not actually you're on the flight path? Because there's wind, there's other planes, there's other things which are affecting the trajectory of that plane outside of the control of the pilot. But the amazing thing is that even though the plane is off the flight path for 80% of the journey, it still makes it to its destination 10 hours later. And why is that? Because the pilot is always trying to get back to the flight path. The perfection of life is not being on the flight path at every single point of the journey, because you know what? Most of us are unlikely to have a perfect week in life. Most of us are unlikely to even have a perfect day in life. If you have a perfect morning, you're doing well. Right? But the goal of life is not to be perfect. Well, the goal of life is to be perfect. But the goal of life is to keep trying to come back to that perfection, and then perfection waits for you on the other side. So let's learn the art of being perfectly imperfect by continuing to go back to the ideals or the achievables.
Beautiful. I think the Instagram quote is to be progress, not perfection. So we'll have to quote your one instead. It's perfectly imperfect. Brilliant. Okay, so that was judgment for ourselves. The other flip side of that coin is obviously other people judging us as well. So how would you address that? Particularly when I was doing a talk for university students, and they were saying, yeah, we're all, and other people have just been saying now, that people look at you in a different way. You may not have conviction and faith in exactly what you're doing. You're building that faith, you're building that conviction, and they're judging you in so many different ways. So how do you overcome judgment, not just from a spiritual perspective, but more generally? I mentioned their social media, that feeling of constantly being judged. So my story reel has to be this ideal life, even though my life isn't actually an honest reflection of that. So how do we overcome this feeling of being judged by others, and I suppose the flip side is actually judging others as well?
The first thing I would say is that I don't think other people and what they think about us, I think that's important in our life. If it was just about us and our own journey, I don't think we'd reach our potential. So I think the thoughts and feelings that other people have about us are important. When you say someone's judging you, the problem with that is that their thoughts and feelings are almost bringing you down. Whereas sometimes you can have someone in your life who has expectations of you. And those expectations, if you know the heart of the person, they can help you to achieve much more than what you think you can do. So the first thing is, I would say, it's not that we have to shy away and shut out the world and close our eyes and not look at anything and not hear what anyone's saying about us. I think having the feedback of others is very good. They say feedback is the breakfast of champions. But what I would say is that we have to have relationships in our life with people who have three qualities. When you have relationships with people who, number one, know you, number two, love you, and number three, have the spiritual acumen to actually help you, then I think the way they think about you, the expectations they aim towards you, the thoughts and feelings they have about you, they can be the most empowering thing in the world. So I don't think other people's thoughts are the problem. I think it's just establishing relationships with people who have these qualities, and then getting that energy which uplifts you. But too often what happens is we take the thoughts and feelings of people who don't know us, people who don't necessarily love us, and people who don't necessarily have the insight to help us, and then we take that as super important. And then it ends up dragging us down.
Great answer. Thank you so much. I'm trying to collate a few of these as we go. So the other one I was thinking about was finding the right balance and lots of different responsibilities. So that's obviously many people here can relate to work. So many different responsibilities. And they may look at you and they may say, okay, it's easy for you because you live in the temple. You wake up and you don't have to worry about bills. You don't have to worry about looking after kids. I realize all the choices that you make. But yeah, the reality is that there's constantly something going on. So how can we, primarily everyone in the Grahastha ashram, or likely to be not living in the temple full time, how do they manage these responsibilities, as Arjun was asked to do in the Bhagavad Gita?
Yeah, we just came from East London, and we just had an event there called No Time to Live. I just found out later it was a spin on a double dosser movie called No Time to Die. So yeah, we were talking about time. Let me share with you four sutras of time that I gave to them. The first sutra of time that I gave to them number one, in life it's not about having time. In life it's about making time. There are some things which are so important in life that you don't, the question in your mind is, do I have time for this? That question doesn't even come up. If someone tomorrow put a frozen pizza on your plate and you said, like, what's going on here? And they said, well, I didn't have time to put it in the oven. I mean, you have to make time. If you drove up the motorway and you were going to Scotland and after 50 miles you ran out of petrol and you looked at the driver and said, like, what's going on? And said, well, I didn't have time to put the petrol in. I mean, there's some things in life which are just so important, which are so integral, which are just so foundational that it's not a question of having time. It's a question of making time. And so I think psychologically, when we say, I don't have time, what we have to be deeply honest is what we're saying is, I don't think it's important. So next time someone asks you about something and you say, I don't have time, stop yourself at that moment and say to yourself, what I'm really saying is, I don't think this is important. And then ask yourself, do I really not think this is important? Is this really not important in my life? So the first sutra is, some things are so important, it's not about having time, it's about making time. The second sutra I gave them is, when time is utilized, time expands. Did you know that? Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Kalosmi, I am time. So if you want to be spiritual, Krishna is right there to help you. And Krishna says, I am time. And Krishna can give you all the time in the world. But why will Krishna give you all the time in the world if the time that you currently have is not being utilized effectively? If we sit back and look at our lives and see how many ways we waste time, then we begin to see why time isn't expanding in my life. Because when time is utilized, time expands. The third sutra is that when desire deepens, capacity inflates. When desire deepens, capacity inflates. So when your desire for something is going deeper and deeper, then you will find in the time that you do have, you're able to do so much more because you're focused. The biggest time waster is our own mind, which is procrastinating. Our own mind, which is in 100 places when we're trying to focus on one thing. But when your desire for something is so deep, then the focus that that brings in the activity means that in a small amount of time you can achieve so much. When desire deepens, capacity inflates. And the final one is, free two birds with one key. That's a spin on killing two birds with one stone. We don't want to kill two birds with one stone, but we want to free two birds with one key. And what I was sharing with them is that in life, we compartmentalize our life too much. We say, this is my time to be spiritual, and this is my time to do material things. This is the time when I read the Bhagavad Gita, and this is the time when I spend it with my family. But imagine you spend time with your family reading Bhagavad Gita. Wow. Free two birds with one key. You say, this is my time for exercise, and this is my time for chanting. But how about in the morning, if you went out and did your chanting while going on a nature walk around the park? Free two birds with one key. Don't just be a husband, be a spiritual husband. Don't just be a parent, be a spiritual parent. In that way, what you begin to realize is that all of your dharmas, the worldly ones and the spiritual ones, start to seamlessly integrate. And then what you'll find over time is you don't have a material life and a spiritual life. Your whole life is spiritual. Because you've learned the art of how to integrate instead of separate and compartmentalize.
So that last principle is the one that I think we all struggle with. So we understand Sanatana Dharma, our eternal duty, and Svadharma, all of our material responsibilities and duties. So yes, we want to integrate, but how does that happen? You're working a 9 to 7. How do you practically, read the Gita? So just taking your example, you know, our family, okay, so read the Gita with your family. Well, my family doesn't want to read the Gita with me. Or think of Krishna when I'm at work. Or how do I think of Krishna when I'm, you know, checking out whatever I'm doing? I work at a shop and I'm just at checkout, whatever it is. So how do you actually do that? I always think about Arjuna, and I always think, it was easy for Arjuna because he had Krishna on his chariot, when doing his duty. So how do we have Krishna in our own chariot when we are doing our day-to-day duties?
Like I was mentioning, life doesn't change overnight. You know, we've come to a point in spiritual life where our life is already set up, and then we find out about Krishna consciousness. Have you ever been on the motorway and you're driving up, and because you get distracted, you miss the exit? And then you're like, oh my God, I just missed the exit. And all you really want to do is just do a U-turn. But you know that would not be good for your health. Right? So then the first thing you do is you look at the sat-nav. And you find out, like, okay, what's the damage? Right? And then it tells you you've got to go like 6 miles up the motorway to get off at the next exit. And then you've got to get around. And you can just feel like, I just want to give up. I just want to stop right here. But what you've got to do in that situation, you've got to accept it. I missed the exit. Now what I've got to do is I've got to just drive up the motorway. And it feels like I'm wasting time. I'm going away from my goal. And you've got to accept that's part of the process. So you're going to have to speed up the motorway. Then you're going to have to slow down. Then you're going to have to get off at the exit. Then you're going to come round all the way around the roundabout. And then you're going to have to come down. And then you're going to be able to take the exit. So life's a little bit like that. It's not like, now I want to be Krishna conscious. Okay, boom. This is a magic wand. I'm going to touch every part of my life. My family, I'm just going to introduce Krishna. My career, I'm just going to magically touch everything, and now it's all going to be spiritual. No, my friend, you've gone up the motorway and you've missed the exit. So now you've got to be patient, and you've got to have a vision. And so, yeah, maybe your family won't change overnight, but maybe you can start injecting some spirituality. Maybe your career, you've got to start doing things. Keep pictures of Krishna around you. Change all the passwords on your computer to Krishna's names. Use some of your earnings to serve Krishna. Use some of the abilities and skills that you learn in your career to serve the temple. And in that way, start connecting things one by one. And over time, you'll develop a very spiritual life.
All devotees' passwords are Krishna 108. So it actually is. She's like, I'm going to add an exclamation mark to that. Okay, so we are going to do one more theme, and then I'm going to open it up to questions. So please start thinking about your questions that you could ask Keshav Maharaj. And it was the last theme I wanted to pick up was the first sutra was all about time management and understanding the importance of spiritual life. And some of the other things that have come up there are laziness, lack of consistency, really a lack of conviction that what we are doing is the right thing we should be doing. So we should be, why should we be dedicating all of this time to our spiritual pursuits? So I just would like to wrap up this with that. What gives you that faith, that conviction, that there are so many different things we could be doing? All of the wonderful souls here chosen on a Sunday afternoon to come here and listen to you. But why should they keep doing that week after week?
So essentially we're talking about motivation and conviction and how to deepen that.
Yes.
I'll give you a few answers and then I'll give you a piece of my heart. A few ways in which you can improve your conviction or deepen your conviction. The first way is through philosophy. Krishna's words in the Bhagavad Gita are so powerful because they get to the root of the world. They're like an X-ray machine. And you begin to see life, see all the occurrences of the world, see what's going on around you, but you see beyond just the externals. And Krishna's words in the Bhagavad Gita then give you a deep conviction that there's some substance here. There's some deep experience here. There's something much more to life than what I thought. And therefore those words, the words of the scripture, the words of philosophy, are incredibly transformational. And therefore every day we're spending time with the scriptures. He said in a beautiful verse, Malina Vashanam Pumsham Jalasanam Dinedine Gita Shakle Bashishnanam Samsara Malanashanam. It's very simple Sanskrit. Jalasanam Dinedine. Just as every single day you take a bath with water to cleanse your body, Gita Shakle Bashishnanam Samsara Malanashanam. Every day you should bathe your intellect in the words of the Gita in order to gain clarity and conviction as to what the trajectory of your life should be. So the first thing that will deepen your conviction is engaging with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. On top of that, the second thing that will increase your conviction is associating, making friendship and having genuine exchange with the devotees who are practicing Krishna consciousness, people. Philosophy deepens your conviction. People deepen your conviction. If we look at our life, basically we'll be able to identify five people who basically have molded who I am now, because people influence us deeply. And the third thing is practice. By actually applying what Krishna says in the Gita and seeing Krishna in your life, seeing the process of Krishna consciousness actually work, you will actually begin to develop the conviction that I want to know what more there is there. I want to see what more there could be that I could find through this spiritual path. So philosophy, people, and practice. If you do these things, your conviction will go deeper and deeper and deeper. And what I want to share with you, just on a final note on this, is at the end of the Gita, Krishna says something very incredible to Arjuna. After Krishna has spent so much time explaining everything to Arjuna, Krishna says in a beautiful verse, Iti te jnanam akhyatam bhuyat bhuyatalamaya vimrashe tadashe shena yate chasi tathaku. Krishna looks at Arjuna and he says, Iti te jnanam akhyatam, I have given you this incredible knowledge. Guya guya karam maya, this is so confidential, it hasn't been revealed to any people as openly and lucidly as I've revealed it to you. Vimra shayta dashe shena, Arjuna, think about it deeply. Yata icha tatha guru, and then whatever your desire is, that you do. Krishna at the end of the Bhagavad Gita says to Arjuna, whatever your desire is, that you do. So ultimately, all of us have to do some deep introspection and ask ourselves, what am I investing my time, my energy, my commitment in life in? No one in this world is alien to commitment. Everyone in this room is committed to something. Everyone in this room is committed to someone. Everyone in this room is committed to some goal and aspiration they have in their life. Now what you have to ask yourself is, at the end of life, you don't want to have any regrets. So look back, fast forward in your life, and then think, if I look back at my life, what regrets am I going to have? Are the things that I'm committed to, the things that I'm spending so much time and energy for, are those the things that are really going to give me the fulfilling life? Or am I missing out on key things that later on I will look back and regret deeply? So I think the only ultimate way to gain deep conviction is that each and every person has to become thoughtful in their own life and ask themselves the question, where am I investing my time, my energy, my attention, and my commitment? And what will I really get from that? And when all is said and done, when time runs out, when I look back and reflect on what I achieved in this life, will I be satisfied? Will I be happy? Or will I feel I missed something? And if you can identify something that you may have missed, that may well be the thing that you have to put time and energy and effort and commitment into now.
Thank you. Yes, life is so busy that we don't often stop to actually reflect and think about, where am I? That question came up. I don't even know where I am. How to move forward? I don't know where I am. So if you do feel like you are stalling in your spiritual life and losing momentum, we now have the secret formula, the three P's. So you can reflect, you can introspect, you can ask yourself, philosophy, am I bathing my intellect and consciousness in the scripture? People, am I surrounding myself with the right types of people that are going to help raise me up? And finally, am I putting it into practice? Because it isn't an armchair philosophy, we're meant to actually put it into practice. And when we do, it's a beautiful spiritual science, and it does work, as demonstrated here. So thank you so much, Maharaj. I did want to open it up to questions now, and see if anybody else had any general questions. They can be linked directly or more generally. Yes?
So there's that saying that you are the company that you keep. What happens if you're taking or wanting to take an enriched spiritual journey and, you know, learn more and become more spiritual and you're on that path, but you have a past, you have family, you have friends who are on a very, very different path, who have questionable choices in their life and follow certain paths that no longer align to you, but you also feel guilt for letting those people go in your life. How does one do that without letting them go or feeling stronger than ourselves to not be influenced by the kind of choices that they might make in their life, but still be committed to us? Is that possible, or is it a choice that we have to say that you no longer sort of benefit from my journey? I didn't have to say it without sounding so rude about it, but is it possible to really say we are so strong that those things don't influence us anymore?
Thank you so much, it's a beautiful question. We're not suggesting that now you've come to Krishna consciousness, do like a major mass delete on your phone book and block a few people on WhatsApp and so on and so forth. Okay, let me share a few things with you. The first thing is that when we talk about relationships and gaining things in relationships which will help us in our spiritual journey, it's not just what we take from other people, but what we give to other people. You know, Krishna has surrounded you with a bunch of people because those people are there for you to serve. And by serving them, you awaken your own Krishna consciousness. It's not that you only awaken your Krishna consciousness when you are around devotees who tell you something amazing Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita. That really uplifted my spiritual life. Yes, it did. But you know, when you go out there and you speak to someone or you serve someone who's not a devotee of Krishna or who's on a different path, but you serve them lovingly, do you know that that also brings an amazing contribution to your spiritual life? So there are many people in our life who may not necessarily be spiritual, but we can still serve them. We can still care for them. And that will bring an immediate growth to our spiritual journey. The second thing I would say is this. Those people today who you think aren't interested or aren't on the path or aren't in any way inclined, you'll be amazed. You'll be amazed at how people change. You'll be amazed at how they go through different experiences and their life trajectory changes. And many people who may not be spiritual now just by your contact with them and your good character and your good example, you may be doing a lot to actually bring people to that spiritual journey by your own example. And so, you know, when I joined the temple, it was like, for 1 year, practically every week, I had different delegates of my family and friends coming here telling me, "You're wasting your life." And in a very loving way, actually. And that's another thing I would say, that when there are family and friends who don't necessarily encourage you in your spiritual journey, it's not because they're bad people, necessarily. It's just because they love you and they don't want to lose you. And when they see you're taking this seriously, they think you may change and that they may not be able to relate to you in the same way. So that happened to me. And the amazing thing is, 20 years later, those same people come and we have amazing conversations about the Bhagavad Gita, and they really appreciate all the wisdom that they're getting. So people change. And be aware of that. So that's the second thing I would say. And then the third thing I would say is, there are some relationships which are toxic. Now that's a different thing. You know, there are just some relationships which are infused with so much negativity and so much discouragement that they're just too, you can't do anything with that. And in our life, we have to have the bravery to walk away from toxic relationships. And that's one of the biggest things that many people suffer with in their life, is that they're not able to create distance in a situation that they know is very harmful. So if that's the case, then we just take help and advice of others and create that distance. Those are some thoughts. Do you want to add something?
All I was going to add was that whatever situation we find ourselves in, it feels like it's the hardest situation in the world. And just talking to other devotees who actually have a very conducive spiritual circle, and they were saying to me, "You know what, Nanda, I feel really uninspired because everyone around me is a devotee, and so I just kind of take it all for granted, and it's easy for me." And so I really like this point that Keshav Maharaj was saying, that it's not about taking association, it's about giving association and using that challenge to build your relationship with Krishna as well. And the toxicity point is a really good one as well, because we're meant to get to a point where we understand that everyone is a spiritual spark, everyone is connected to Krishna, and therefore we should love everyone. But love happens on different levels. And so, yeah, definitely you can love from a distance, you can respect from a distance, and just be intellectual. And it all goes back to the same point about self-reflection and understanding, what is this person's association doing to me? And yeah, if you're honest and sincere about that, it will become very clear. And then, yeah, be responsible accordingly. I just want to check in with the organisers. Are we got time for more questions? We have? Okay. Yeah, perfect. Other questions, yes.
And the question is, that's okay. My reflection was on what Maharaj was saying about journaling. So I listened to a class on journaling, and it's inspired me to start journaling, because one of my goals is to work on some of my internal qualities in order to purify myself and feel more adequate to continue on my journey. I've been inspired to buy a new laptop, because in your class you said, you don't write it down if you're not on a laptop, so thank you. The question was, I've also heard you say multiple times that when you read the Shastras, you need to read them multiple times before you actually digest them. It could be, three times, it could be more, but you should continue reading. Reading is one of the things that I find quite difficult, because as I'm reading, if I don't digest something immediately, it knocks me to my first question. I'm not adequate, I'm not intelligent enough for this, why don't I understand this? Do you have any guidance around the best way to approach books? So, for example, what books should we start with? In what order should we go? With the Srimad Bhagavatam, should we go canto by canto? Should we start with summary books? Like, Gita 3 is amazing. So should we start with books like that to kind of give us the initial insight?
That was a planted question for me to promote the books.
Good timing, good timing.
Yeah, the books are difficult. They're not easy to understand, always. Krishna says a beautiful thing in chapter 4 of the Bhagavad Gita, which is entitled Transcendental Knowledge. And what does Krishna say? Sa'evayam maya devya yoga prokta puratanam bhakto sime sakha cheti rahasyam yagadutanam. Krishna says this knowledge is rahasya, which means very confidential. It's not available and accessible to everyone. But Krishna says it's available to you, Arjuna. Why? Because you're BSc, PhD, MA. No. Bhakto sime sakha cheti. Because you're friendly towards me and because you're devoted. There's only one qualification actually to understand this philosophy, which is the deep desire and desperation to grasp it, to understand it. You'd be amazed, for practically 15 years, I traveled up and down this country distributing books most days of the week. And I would meet sometimes the most intelligent people, professors, and I would give them the books and I'd be sure they'd understand it. And they couldn't. They just couldn't grasp it. And I'd sometimes give a book to a very simple person who maybe has never read a book in their life. But because they were so desirous and desperate to understand, Krishna in the heart reveals and gives that insight. So the first thing is, when we're dealing with spiritual knowledge, it's got nothing to do with intellectual capacity, but it's rather to do with the intense desire to really want to know, who am I? What is life about? I really need an answer. I really want to find out. And if one does that, then actually one sees that they advance in the knowledge. But then, along with that, yes, there is a practical way to approach the philosophy. Yes, you can read step by step. So, we have different books. There's one book online. Okay, now it's going to sound like a joke. Anyway, you can do a search on it on Google. It's called Bhakti Life, and it's available for free PDF download. So if you just do PDF Bhakti Life, you'll get it. And in the back of that book, there's a table, and it basically gives you an idea of how you can progress through the books, and it gives you an idea of how you can break down that study process. And the main thing I would say with philosophy is, number one, do it regularly. So just read every day, even if it's 10 minutes or 20 minutes. Number two, whatever you read, make sure you discuss it with others. So come to the temple, discuss it with someone, do one of the courses, join one of our Sangha groups. Be in forums where you can discuss more. And then the third thing I would say is, yeah, avail yourself of study guides and other materials that are there that can help you. And if you do those things, I'll just say one final thing. In the Niti Shastra, it said, when you chant the holy name, you should think you're going to die tomorrow. But when you study the Shastra, you should think I'm going to live forever. Why does it say that? When you chant, when you put your hand in your bead bag, you should think, this is it. And there's such a desperation there. You should chant as though it's the final day. But when you're studying Shastra, when you're studying philosophy, you can't understand it in a day. You're going to think, I'm going to live forever. You're going to think, this is a long-term journey. I'm not just going to clock it out in a year. This is a long-term journey. I'm studying the Gita. I picked it up when I was 15. And I'm coming up, it's like nearly 30 years. It will come to that soon. And I'm reading it now, and I'm not just saying that. Really, like, I'm just fascinated at what I'm discovering now. These books are like a zip file. You can just extract so much more according to your depth. So it's a long term thing. And okay, one final thing I'll say. Don't read to get through the book. Read so that the book gets through to you. You're not here. here to gather more and more information. We're here to try to experience deep transformation. And so it's not about volume of knowledge, but it's about the real quality of connection and communion that we feel with that transcendental wisdom.
Just to build on that, so it's a sense of patience with it, and also taking the pressure off yourself, because if you think you're going to get it immediately and then you don't, then you get frustrated and you go right back to number one, you're not good enough. So a few things that really helped me, definitely doing the courses that School of Bhakti does, because that does it in a very systematic way, and then it's just logical and it's like, this makes sense. The study guides are really good as well. So if you do the study guides, so there's Gita 3, there's the original Gita acronym book, there's so many different ones that School of Bhakti and Geshe Maharaj has kindly put together. And most recently what I found was, and again I had to be really honest with myself, I've been trying to read Bhagavatam for such a long time, and what I found was, I just allowed myself to just read the verses, because initially I was like, this is like seriously sinful that I'm skipping purports. What's going on? Who do I think I am? I'm skipping purports. But I realized you just understand the different layers. So you start with a study guide, get a nice overview, then you read the original text, where you're just reading the text, and then you have a good understanding, and then you can go into the purport, and then there's Acharya's commentaries and so many other things you can go into. But yeah, slow and steady wins the race, and Krishna's blessings will reveal it to us.